Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Season 2, Episode 6 starts now. I'm your host, Brandon Davis, joined today by Jenna Anderson.
Hey, everybody.
Charlie Ridgely.
What up?
Aaron Perrine.
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on is we got a chonky boy today. We got a chonky episode. Happy Wednesday. Good luck getting through this one. It's a big one. We're going to talk about all those Super Bowl trailers, all two of them. Doctor Strange, Moon Knight. We got some other news to share. And then we have Uncharted director Ruben Fleischer, half hour with us, second half of the show. So sit through a commercial, help us pay the bills, and then get all the candid insights, what it's like to make Uncharted, what it's like to smell Tom Holland, what it's like to make Venom and read the reviews and have to react to them and digest them and be the person who made that movie. It's a very interesting interview. Ruben Fleischer is a hell of a guy. I am a fan of Ruben Fleischer and his movies. I quite enjoyed Uncharted. I think the Rotten Tomatoes reviews are in no way surprising because that was a movie I think people could be tough on and wanted to be tough on, and it's certainly not the video games. That said, I had fun watching it. I liked it quite a bit, and if I wrote a review, it would have been positive, but I didn't. Tanner Dedman did for comicbook.com, and he was positive anyway. I liked Uncharted. Anyway, enough about Uncharted for now. We have a lot to discuss, and we're just going to jump right in. Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness dropped a trailer at the Super Bowl, and everybody was like, where's Phase Zero? Here we are. Here we are. I know. We didn't go live Sunday. It was Sunday. We were watching the Super Bowl. Okay, listen. But here we are. The trailer dropped. I thought it was a brilliant trailer. We're going to go around the horn here first. Quick reactions. Everybody in the comment section, please do the same. Jenna, what did you think of the trailer?
Oh, my God. It exceeded my expectations. Like, at this point, there were so many different ways they could have put the second trailer out in terms of just focusing on certain characters. Like, I feel like general audiences still don't know who America Chavez is yet, but they are going to. But it's like between introducing the characters and dealing with the cameos and the multiverse of it all, they struck a really good balance in a way I wasn't prepared for. Also, just having the trailer come out like right before kickoff, I like disassociated for the first quarter of the game because I was just like, this trailer is already, like, my expectations are so high, I'm not even paying attention to the football game or to any of the other commercials anymore because there was so much in this trailer.
Yep. Can I tell you, I was in Denver, and I thought the game started at 5:30 Denver time, and Eleanor and I were in a Taco Bell drive-thru, and I Google searched at 4:10 p.m. Denver time, what time is kickoff for the Super Bowl, and it said 4:30, and I was like, oh, no, we're going to be late. And then as soon as we got our food, I got the notification at Marvel posted a video, and it was the Doctor Strange trailer thumbnail. And I was like, no, I am going to miss the discourse. So I parked the car and did it from the parking lot. Charlie, what'd you think of the trailer?
I think it was really unfortunate on Marvel's part that they ran the Moon Knight trailer after this one. Because this was, I mean, no disrespect to the Moon Knight TV spot, but Doctor Strange had so much to unpack. It was kind of unfortunate that I work on Sunday, so I was working on, you know, like Super Bowl commercials and all kinds of other stuff, and I didn't go till later that night and really dissect and really dig into it. But I watched it probably 3 or 4 times on repeat back to back once my shift was over, because it was one of the crazier trailers that I can remember from Marvel. I mean, there's, you know, we kind of know the formula of a Marvel trailer, like what it can look like. There are always some surprises, but this was just chaos and insanity from start to finish. I was really, really, really blown away by what we saw. I know you made a joke when we hopped on here that you were excited to hear me hate on it, but I don't have that. I don't have that energy today. I am all in on Doctor. I mean, it's a Sam Raimi movie, so I was always going to be on all in on it anyway. But you know,
wow,
this just really
Charlie
affirmed that
a this rare is gonna be something good crazy. Take from Charlie. Aaron, what'd you think of the trailer?
I really enjoyed it. I watched it so many times that I think I almost missed Odell Beckham Jr. score the first touchdown in the Super Bowl. Shocking.
I had bets on who would score the first touchdown, and I didn't have OBJ, but I actually forgot that he even scored because I was watching the trailer. Yeah, Cooper Kupp, you let me down, buddy.
He had all the other touchdowns.
He had all those touchdowns.
Yeah, except the first one, which would have won me like $100, but instead I lost my money. But whatever. But I'm sorry, Aaron. I'm excited today. I'm just loud today. I'm so sorry. Okay, cut you off.
We're making up for lost time because there were people in your mentions. I'm sure everybody else had people like, "Where are you guys? Where are?" And it's like, we will get to it on Wednesday. We need to watch it 96 more times and zoom in on things. I think that's the weirdest part about this is that, much in the vein of some of the other trailers, like trying to figure out what's going to be in this movie and what's there as a misdirect is a fool's errand. I do not know. I'm just going to try and accept all of it on its face value because there's so much stuff going on that I'm like, if this is the stuff that they're letting go, what else is hiding in this movie? Like that you just see in the fin of the shark right now. Like what's in that water?
Is it even a shark?
Is it even a shark? Jenna, I need you to get up on a buoy and figure it out for us, okay?
I like how it's like,
I wouldn't be surprised. There's always those shots that are like not in the movies, mm-hmm. like the, you know, Iron Man and Spider-Man. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if half this trailer just doesn't appear in the movie like it appears in the trailer. Like, it's all alternate takes from stuff mm-hmm. that's actually in the movie.
I know. Adam Barnhart wrote a piece for us last night where he was like, what if the entire trailer is just a misdirect? Like, what if nothing in this trailer is actually in the movie? Which I would hate that. I feel like that's next to impossible, especially with something as big as this. But like, stranger things have happened.
I will never forget watching the Endgame trailer, being extremely excited, and then getting in the movie and being like, holy crap, the trailer was the first 15 minutes. There's still 3 hours of this movie. What the heck is about to happen? Because it was like, oh man, all this stuff's gonna go down. It's gonna be so exciting. And it's literally just like, here's 15 minutes. Now go ahead with the rest of it. So
I think that could be a realistic possibility.
Yeah.
For this, Aaron.
Internet would freak out. Everyone would lose their minds. Like all of us would lose our minds if it was the
first. Like he goes to see the Illuminati 10 minutes into the movie.
First 15 minutes is here. It's literally just Loki again. It's Dr. Strange goes into the sanctum. He's like, oh, it's gotten out of hand. Then he gets thrown in jail and boom. And then cut, smash, cut. Dr. Strange and Multiverse at this big old Sam Raimi. A Sam Raimi joint. Full screen. 15 minutes in.
Oh, man. Eight like 70-something more days until Dr. Strange the Multiverse of Madness. I thought the trailer was brilliant. I think what Charlie said encapsulated what I think. It was just action-packed and chaotic from start to finish. It was emotional in that Wanda on Wanda crime moment. Like I'm not ready to see Wanda meet herself and have a self-reflection like that from characters who have been through similar but probably different tragedies because they are variants. It's gonna be something. And Wanda, as Julia Delbell said in the comment section just now, Wanda made points. Yes, she did. The cast looks great. It looks like this is like Doctor Strange's Civil War. Like, yes, it's his movie, but this is packed with arcs for other characters, and that's going to really I love when that happens. I love how every character in Civil War kind of had their own arc and pairing to that and layers to the arcs, and it looks like Strange is going to have Strange, Wanda, Miss America, Wong, literally everyone else, and I'm interested to see how much they all matter. But the big question coming out of the trailer, this is insane that this is even a question. But was it Tom Cruise? after the trailer dropped, a couple images went by where there's an obvious shot where there is a Captain Marvel fighting Wanda. It is very clearly a Captain Marvel fighting Wanda. And I believe it is Maria Rambeau, Lashana Lynch, back as Maria Rambeau. Probably a variant. I think that Maria is really dead in the main MCU, whatever their 616 number is. I think that she died during the blip. As Monica learned. But I think that in another universe, Maria might have been the one to become Captain Marvel, and that's what we're going to see. So there's a similar shot where people are zooming in and saying they see a goatee, they see the silver suit, they're saying it's Tom Cruise's superior Iron Man because some rumor started going online that Tom Cruise was playing Iron Man as a Tony Stark variant because they're playing with almost castings in this movie, and that was one of them. I'm going to say, listen, I see it, but I don't, like, I see where it's coming from. I see how you could zoom in on that and you can like get the outline of a goatee as much as you can get the Deadpool outline on the poster, which is not very much, but if you want to see it, you can see what you want to see. That said, I don't think that we saw Tom Cruise as the superior Iron Man. But that said, I did go buy Superior Iron Man number one online just in case. So
Tom Cruise is not in this movie. I'm just like, it's
stop it. I was not in this train of thought at all. Like, I've heard the Tom Cruise rumors. I'm aware of them. But, like, I thought that was just the Captain Marvel the entire time. And then, BD, you posted your tweet. And, like, it started making me, like, question everything I've ever thought in all of reality. Because I was like, maybe it is. So, like, it's funny now that you think it's not Tom Cruise. Because I'm now like, maybe it is. Who knows at this point? I have no idea.
Like the Ultron bots are back. Like, if you read, yeah. He could... Like, it would make sense for a superior Iron Man to be in the movie. I don't think that we saw Tom Cruise in this trailer, though. I'll be honest with you. And if,
I mean, because he was never even cast. Like, that was their leading choice. It wasn't even like Tony, you know, Tobey Maguire coming back.
He could be in the movie, but I don't think.
I mean, look, this is one of those where you watch this trailer and the theories get difficult when you really think, like, truly anything could happen in this specific movie. Like, this is the one where we could literally see anything, so you can't rule it out. It just seems like a thing that wouldn't happen.
Aaron has some thoughts.
You know.
I want everybody to be happy. So I want to be, but I also do not like how they did Maria at all. I did not enjoy that. I would like to see it. LaShia Lynch is awesome. Like,
yeah, they gave her a goatee. It sucks.
She's one of the best characters in the dang movie. Like, her and Ana de Armas like steal the show in that movie. I want her to have some sort of resolution, and her being Photon would be dope. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I would also like to see Superior Iron Man, because that's one of the nuttier things that happen. Like
it's a win-win comics. Then it's a win-win.
Just completely unlike leashing Tom Cruise to be like as arch as possible as a Tony Stark that never learned any of the lessons that ours did sounds hysterical. But also, you can't have that much Tony Stark running around in the MCU, and then he probably wouldn't survive the movie. But yeah, I want both of them. I want both of it to happen. Why not? Why do we have to stop with one or the other? It looks like we're getting all sorts of crazy stuff in this movie. Like, we just spent, 3 minutes on, like, it was literally 6 seconds. Shout out to, I think, whoever said, like, Tom Cruise at 226.
Lizard at 226.
This whole trailer is everything at 226. Because
this is the image in question. You have this as one shot, and then in the same trailer, you have this shot, and that is Maria Rambeau, like, unquestionably.
I feel like.
And then I don't know if this is literally the same shot. I haven't studied the trailer that much, but I do think like this is still Maria Rambeau. And if it's not, then they're just misleading us by putting the exact same kind of a visual effect of the powers onto it.
Yeah,
but like I could see how people think they look different, for sure. But I do think it's just a trick on the eyes. Is the dress blue? Is the dress white? Whatever.
What if she has a mohawk just like Carol?
Yeah.
And it just
what if Maria
flies forward and back?
But sure, but then it doesn't. I'll give. I hear you on that. But in this photo, like, there's no mohawk. You know what I mean? And then this one, like, there seems to be some hair.
They engineered this. This is Feige and them being devious.
No,
look at us,
you
man.
Know that Feige
we're going through Zapruder film right now. Mm-hmm. This is dumb.
Feige is sitting there saying, "I gave you Patrick Stewart, and you're asking me for Tom Cruise."
Yep,
that's what Feige is saying. Yes. Is it never enough?
Is it not enough, Brandon?
You and know it's that, never. You know the answer to that question.
Enough.
It's always. It's
if
never
it was
enough.
If it was enough, Marvel would stop making money. all right. So, that's a great transition. Let's talk about Patrick Stewart. I want the comment section to weigh in. Do you think that's just Maria Rambeau? Is everybody who is hopping on this Superior Iron Man train crazy? Or do they have something to stand on? You think it's like a maybe? Like, are you?
It can also be Superior Iron Man that's not Tom Cruise. Let's just make sure that's
I don't want it any other way.
I'm just
Tom Cruise is Mephisto confirmed. Well,
Yeah.
That kind of. Patrick Stewart is back, seemingly, but yes. He said, should we tell him the truth? Yes, you should tell us the truth. You're in the movie. And then we saw his little ear. That's definitely Professor X, seemingly like a key player in the Illuminati. I don't think, like, if this 99.9% sure, if I bet on this, I will win, unlike the Super Bowl, that is Patrick Stewart as Professor X. I don't think that that's going to be the same Professor X. I think that's going to be another variant that's just nothing more than a nod. I hope it's not. I think it's going to be an inevitably much better payoff than Evan Peters as Ralph Boner, one of the worst things I've ever seen. But I
Team Ralph.
Charlie. No. Do you like the Ralph Boner bit?
I like that it was that it played with expectations. I like the idea of taking expectations and messing with them. I do appreciate
Nick, the can idea you go ahead and it. Turn off Charlie's camera just for 1 minute? Give him 1 minute and time out. Just Nick. We'll bring him back. Just Nick. Let him think about what he's done. Thank you, Nick. Charlie. What?
I like the concept. I like not just giving people what they want and trying to convert or subvert expectations. That doesn't always go well, but I like the concept behind trying to flip things on their head.
No.
Nick.
Charlie's in jail again. All right, we're back to Patrick Stewart. I mean, it's clearly Patrick Stewart and the Illuminati, which I guess the real conversation to have here is that this seems to be a secret, like a story that starts the secret wars of it all, because like the Illuminati in this movie could lose and universes could start to collide on themselves, leading to secret wars. Any thoughts, anybody? Jenna, what do you think?
No, I completely agree. I think whatever this incarnation of the Illuminati is not long for this world in one way or another. I think like this might eventually lead to us getting an Illuminati in like the main universe, but this for now just seems to be kind of playing with people's expectations. I'm excited just to see them in the comics in general, and it seems like they're having a lot of fun with who could even be in this roster. I know people are like, is Dr. Doom Mr. Fantastic? Like anything feels possible in terms of the other people who are vaguely outlined in those chairs in the one shot of the trailer. So I like that we're getting them, but I would be surprised if any of them survive this movie, honestly.
Who do we think are the Illuminati in this movie? Anybody got a lineup that they want to share?
Namor 1000% is in this movie.
Wow.
Namor.
I'd be shocked if Namor wasn't in this movie. And I bet I would assume there's some kind of Black Panther in the movie too, but that's...
I genuinely think that the original plan was to have Chadwick play Star-Lord T'Challa as one of the Illuminati, and I'll forever be sad that that's not something we can get. But that's just a multi. That's and also, by the way, speaking of Chadwick, today is the fourth birthday of Black Panther. The movie came out today 4 years ago already. Unbelievable that is 4 years old already. But Chadwick, what a legend, forever missed.
Do you put ahead, stock Aaron. In the stuff that we're getting in the chat right now about like one of the variants instead of getting Superior Iron Man, getting Iron Lad?
Oh,
and then when Wanda comes through and ransacks the place, he flees to try and stop that from happening by assembling the kids like he did in the comics.
He's just a lone survivor.
He's a lone survivor.
I think that would be a story for the next movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, and it is funny to imagine like Jonathan Majors running away from the hospital with the detonator, like in Dark Knight, and being like, "Ha ha ha! I got rid of them too. Like, I did it. Another piece falls into place." It is sort of interesting. I hadn't even thought about that. You guys are crazy. Freaking comment section coming through, making me question everything.
And the comment section is a co-host.
They basically are. At this
they
point.
Are.
What is really interesting about the Professor X thing that it, again, we don't know for sure, but this is Patrick Stewart as Professor X. And if that happens, I just wrote a thing that was really interesting. Guinness World Records announced a month ago that Tobey Maguire and Willem Dafoe broke the record for the longest running Marvel live action character because they went from 2002 Spider-Man to No Way Home. The record had, the previous record was Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman. So they just got it, and now Patrick Stewart's going to immediately take it right back. Like,
I will happily watch that go back and forth.
It's like the Endgame Avatar thing of, like, these are going to keep trading who is the most successful movie of all time. Like, we're just going to have that with, like, Toby and Patrick Stewart.
Now, quiz, right now, at this moment in time, before anything else has come out, who is the longest tenured strictly MCU actor?
Samuel Jackson.
Nope.
Yes.
Nope.
He was in the first one.
Yep, that is correct. But I'm saying, of the things that have been released at, right now,
he was in the first. Unless you're talking about Tobey Maguire, because he was part of.
I'm talking about my man Happy Hogan.
Oh.
John Favreau.
They're all the same movie.
Yeah, but John Favreau was in Spider-Man No Way Home, so he is currently the longest tenured because he's appeared most recently and was in the first one. Samuel Jackson will take it back when Secret Invasion comes
out. But right now it's Happy Hogan.
Well, no, I understand. Okay. I understand. I'm just saying, as of right now, the longest spent. Bailiff!
I don't like how our jail has just escalated to just
you could get taken out at any time. All right.
I don't like Moon Knight nearly enough for this treatment.
Okay. Nick!
Jim is just going to crash guerrilla radio style and just crash this thing.
All right. My last thing.
I just needed to make that clear.
Illuminati. I think you got Captain Carter. I think you got Professor X. I think Namor is a good call by Charlie. I think you'll have John Krasinski as Reed Richards. I think there might be a Strange in there. Maybe a different Strange. That's pretty much as far as I can go.
Four Strangers in the trailer?
At least. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the trailer and the spot, because there's one in the spot that's not in the trailer.
Yeah, the Defenders costume one. That's totally a different one from the main one that we're going to follow.
Yeah, there's the main one, there's the evil one, there's that one, and then there's the one with the arms. If that's not one of the other ones, just a variation of that. I don't know. There's a lot of Stranges.
All right, now we gotta get to a very important topic here, and I have a message I need to read from Jamie Jurak. Happy birthday, Jamie Jurak, by the way. Happy birthday, Jamie. Everybody in the comments section, let's get you guys singing in there. All right, she said she wants me to read her reaction to the Doctor Strange trailer, and it is word for word. Skull and crossbones. Fuck! That was Jamie's reaction. And on that note, we need to talk about Wanda Maximoff, and everybody would rather hear from Jenna on this one. So Jenna, take it away.
I like how I'm the designated survivor of Wanda Maximoff stands if Jamie isn't here to talk about Wanda. I like the direction that they seem to be going with her. I know there have been rumors for months that of like, oh, she could be the villain of this movie. And I was like, you're really going to have to sell me on that. After this trailer, I'm honestly sold. I think that the way, like you mentioned it earlier, the scene of the two Wandas in the Westview house, I know that is going to just be a gut punch. Like, that is going to hurt in the best possible way to watch. I am so excited to see it. And I think it is this thing of like, You can have problems with the Westview of it all and what she did in Westview. I'm not completely excusing that by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm very curious to see how this further evolves for her. And I love the line of her being like, you changed everything and you were the hero. I changed it and I'm the villain. Like, I like that she is kind of reclaiming this and kind of saying the quiet parts out loud. So I'm very curious to see, as people have said, Wanda's in her reputation era. Like, she's just coming to like take names, and I'm very excited for it.
Oh man, I can't wait to see Wanda. I love how Elizabeth Olsen keeps getting to do more and more, and the delivery of that line is so perfect and poignant and chilling, and I cannot wait to see Wanda figure it all out in this movie. Anybody else got some Wanda thoughts?
There's a lot of discussion about whether that part in the forest is really in the forest or not, because of the nature of her powers. And then like the staging of her saying it's not fair is exactly the same. Like, he still got on his little his puffer and his scarf, speaking of reputation. And then he's like looking very, very shook. Like, maybe the scene changes and he walks in there thinking it's this big, weird white blossom forest, and then it's like, oh no, we're somewhere.
Well, remember that there were two of them. There was her and her astral projection that were hanging out there at the same time.
Yeah.
When apparently he strolled down the mountains in the, you know, in the altered scene.
Wow.
And when that happened, she was outside doing her thing, and then her Scarlet Witch inside was, you know, going through the book and figuring stuff out with the multiverse of it all to find her kids. So, you know, I think that both can be true at the same time. There can be this like crumbling of reality that happens, you know, right away. And And again, Aaron, to your point, way back at the beginning of the episode, like that feels like a very beginning of the, you know, very beginning of the movie kind of situation. And I think they're both going to be villains to an extent. Like, yeah, I mean, obviously, absolutely. Obviously Strange has variants, but like, I think this is going to play with, just like Raimi did with the Spider-Man films, where you play with what the idea of heroism and villainy, like what they really mean. And you know, you had villains that you really like attached to, and both Doc Ock and Green Goblin, like you understood them to an extent, not that they were right, but you got them. And I think that you can really play with that with Strange and what he did for Peter, because he didn't entrap a whole community of people, but also like he altered the multiverse so a kid could get into college. That's kind of a weird flex. And then you have, you know, Wanda, who did what she did for just reasons, it feels like, but also like caused a lot of pain to a lot of people. And so they're going to play with levels of what's right and wrong. And I'm really excited for that exploration in this movie. I do love a gray area.
Yeah.
I do love characters.
One very harebrained thing that I have forgotten until this moment about like your Illuminati like lineup. What are the chances White Vision's up there?
Oh.
What are the chances White Vision's up there?
I don't think it'll be the main MCU's White Vision.
He's not the main MCU's White Vision, though.
But he kind
of
is.
He's
though.
One board of the ship of the MCU's regular Vision.
Well, right. So, but there we don't have. Well, I mean, that would be. I with the information we have right now, I don't think he'll be there, because I don't think like he is of the MCU. He only has knowledge of the main MCU. Like, he doesn't have knowledge of other universes. He doesn't have the means of traveling between different planets or universes and stuff. So I don't know. Maybe that would be interesting, but I don't think so.
Part of me thinks that won't happen, purely because like Marvel wants to sell toys, and it's like you can't really sell a toy of a character who looks almost exactly like he did the last time he was on screen. Like, there's only so many ways you can update like the White Vision look and justify having like new Funko Pops and new action figures and hot toys and stuff. So.
Also,
make it translucent.
Good point. Yeah.
That said, I do think also that the Illuminati is going to die in this movie, most of them anyway.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I think that we're going to see universes get killed, and we're going to see the Illuminati go down. And I think that's what makes this the Secret Wars lead in. And actually, what we got to wrap up here, because we got to talk about Moon Knight, a couple other things. So I do think that we're seeing signs of like things that lead to Secret Wars. Jenna has noted that we might be seeing Savage Land. Like, there's dinosaurs in this trailer. Let's go. Jurassic World could never. Actually, I'm very excited for Jurassic World. Zombies are in here. We have the Ultron bots. Like, there's different universes that are set up in What If. There are different universes that we know from comics that are going to be brought to live action. There is an animated universe.
The Captain Carter shield.
Yeah. The Captain Carter shield, her universe is in it. There's a frame where there's literally like two frames. You have to download the trailer if you want to pause it on the shot. But you can see that one of the universes they are traveling to is animated. Maybe that's X-Men 97. Maybe that's a Spider-Man thing. I don't know. It could be anything. But you're going to see animated versions of Doctor Strange in this movie. There's so much here that shows that this could be, this very obviously is setting the stage for Secret Wars. I don't know if this is as much of like a Civil War setup as Age of Ultron seemed to be, because it felt like a stepping stone. I don't think this movie is going to feel like a stepping stone. I think I really hope this movie is its own complete thing that, like all Marvel movies, has fallout afterwards, but we're getting all the pieces for everybody to lose. And except for maybe Strange and Wanda, they kind of figure out, they get their arc completed, but then like the Illuminati goes down, all the people who try to stop these universes from colliding fail, and later we're going to see them start to fall. Like, it's here. It's all here. Maybe, hopefully, unless the trailer was lying, which is also possible. Also possible. The last thing I want to talk about on this front, on the Doc Strange front, is that I saw on Twitter several people talking about this could be like post House of M already, or there could be a universe that's post House of M, and that we meet a Scarlet Witch who kind of explains that to Wanda or something. I like that theory. I don't know. I think it'd be cool to incorporate it. Elizabeth Olsen has said she wants to do it, and I support Elizabeth Olsen in anything she wants to do. So I don't know, but we'll see. All right, Moon Knight. Anything we want to talk about on Moon Knight? Trailer was really good. 30-second spot, and it's going to get about 30 seconds on the show today.
This was a good trailer.
We're like, giving it the same treatment as the Super Bowl.
this was a good thing for, like, if you are watching the Super Bowl and you've never heard of Moon Knight, this was a good introduction. But for those of us, obviously, who are obnoxiously online and are aware of everything with Moon Knight, it's like, this is a lot of what we've seen before. It still was a very good trailer, though.
Very good trailer. It's going to be very interesting to see how Moon Knight runs into Doctor Strange. Because the finale for Moon Knight is on the week that Doctor Strange hits theaters, right?
I think it's the week before.
Yeah, it's close to the same time.
Well,
yeah.
Because May the 4th was when we all thought Obi-Wan was going to come out. And then we were like, oh, Moon Knight must have a double episode premiere because Obi-Wan's going to come out on the 4th. Obi-Wan's coming out on May 25th, which would mean May the 4th is going to be Moon Knight's finale, unless they still do a double episode premiere.
Yeah.
And then Strange opens on May 6th.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll have any connection. I hope so. I love connections. I was so sad not to see Spider-Man in Hawkeye. Jenna, you added news here from the casting.
The Anubis of it all, or oh, the Khonshu of it all. Yeah. So yesterday, it was confirmed that F. Murray Abraham is playing the voice of Khonshu. Like, that was a thing on the Disney press site. So that's kind of cool. Like, now we know who's voicing Khonshu. And then people have been speculating about Ethan Hawke, like who he could be playing, who he could not be playing, because it seems like the tattoo of the scale on his arm could hint that he's playing Anubis, because his whole thing is judgment and all of that. So yeah, Aaron, what do you think? You're over here doing.
it's like the crocodile design of it is like a real, like, I imagine, tell, but. We don't know for sure. Like, they really found some way to kind of like deny at all costs until the absolute last second, because they named him after this really early villain that only has a little bit of history. And if you ask any Oscar Isaac or Ethan Hawke about it, it's like pulling teeth. They're not just not going to tell you. So we'll all be waiting in suspense. Also, I think, and this is like a really wild leap to make, that if you're going to have a connection after Moon Knight, it's probably going to be with Thor: Love and Thunder and not Multiverse of Madness, because there's so many gods running around.
God Butcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems like a easy like layup thing for me. Because there's so many different weird gods running around in it, like the Egyptian pantheon running through this show, that, you know, Gord and you know, his big pokey stick, they're gonna wander down.
I feel like Adam has mentioned to me like at least 17 times how much he wants Gord to show up at the end of Moon Knight.
Oh,
like, that's cool. His big MCU checklist.
Yeah.
Adam wants Mahershala to like slide in on a skateboard and start dealing with people at the end of it too. And I don't know if that's gonna happen, you know.
I respect people who know what they want from the MCU.
Yep, absolutely.
And obviously there was purple magic coming from the pyramid. It was Agatha all along.
Oh, boy.
We didn't even talk about Agatha. I don't need to. I just want so much Agatha. I want all the Agatha.
Is she in Doctor Strange?
I mean, she's in Westview, so.
Oh.
She's got to be.
House of Harkness. Coven.
Who else is still in Westview?
Who?
Oh,
Ralph.
That was perfect.
Brandon, just disappointed.
That was excellent. This is, I feel Charlie bad for always anyone asks me. This
I gave Nick such a setup. I made sure he had time to get rid of me.
Nick is the best Phase Zero officer. He is ready. He's anyway. Also, happy birthday, Richard, who has the week off for his birthday. But we don't compliment Ralph Boner on this show.
That wasn't even a compliment. That was just, he is in Westview.
You knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
I'm stating a fact. Today is February 16th.
Trash collection in Nashville was yesterday. Stop dumping it out today. Dang. All right.
Monday.
Whatever. We live in different parts of Nashville. All right. A couple of things.
Did you put your trash out on Monday? A
couple other things. There will be an interview with Danny Ramirez that I conducted yesterday for this movie called No Exit that hits Hulu. I can't say anything about the movie yet, but I can say when I interviewed Danny Ramirez, he was an absolute blast to talk to. And I asked him, have you been fitted for any wings lately? And if you don't remember Danny Ramirez, he played Torres in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm going to save his answer for that clip. And we have one other piece of news that Jenna added to the rundown here, so I'll let her take it.
Yeah, so this was our post-credit scene of last week's episode. This was probably like an hour or so after we were done recording. Anthony Ramos from Hamilton and In the Heights and the upcoming Transformers reboot has been cast in Ironheart. He's in a mystery role. The reporting kind of said that he's going to be in multiple projects, and they kind of compared it to how Kang was introduced in Loki and then could kind of spin out from there. I am convinced that he is playing the Hood, because it would just be... That is such a weird and specific corner for Riri to have to fight. And then I could see him just kind of spinning off and dealing with like the kingpin of it all and all of the organized crime sort of stuff. But what do y'all think? Like, what do y'all think now that he's in this show?
I honestly had no guesses. So yours is far better than mine. And I'm looking into it right now. And I think that could be a good fit. Ooh. Yeah, I don't have much to say because I genuinely sat here and stared at that news and tried to think about who he could play. And literally nothing came to my mind. And now, like, there's just – that's a – I support it. I got to educate myself on the hood further.
Yeah, I'm with Brandon. I don't know a lot about the hood, and I'm sad to say that because the hood sounds like a character that I would be very into. Maybe I'm just associating him with Red Hood. I don't know.
But... like went bad for right reasons.
Yeah, that is kind of his vibe. Yeah.
I don't think it matches up with the Jeff Bridges of it all, but I kind of earmarked Obadiah Stane's son to be a big part of Ironheart. And so I love Danny Ramirez for that role. I just don't know if he fits based on Jeff Bridges, but you know, I am confusing all my characters right now.
Either way, we're winning.
I would love anything from, from the young Stane.
No, I know.
Like, oh no, the characters, oh God.
Either way, Anthony is a great actor, so I am like excited to see him in this universe to begin with. It's just, my new pet theory.
If anyone in the chat has not watched In the Heights, it's streaming on HBO Max, and it is one of the best movies of last year.
Yep.
So go check out In the Heights if you
also, haven't. He was in A Star is Born, right?
Yes.
And he's in the new Transformers movie that's coming out.
Yep.
Which is a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
On Paramount.
Which is a trilogy.
Aaron, what
do
you think?
We love Paramount here.
We do. That's where we work now.
Coming to you live from the mountaintop.
Perfect.
Nick, let him stay. I just was wondering, like, there's so many different characters swirling around. I'm kind of with Charlie. Like, I'm freaking floating through the multiverse. I have no idea. Because I saw your thing about the hood, and I'm like, that does, like, make a ton of sense. But it does not make me feel any better because we keep adding people to the Wheel of Evil. And there are a lot of slices. The Wheel of Evil is looking real Price is Right-ish. Like right now. It's not great. I am very confused. I don't know. Like, that's one thing I guess I am hoping that freaking Doctor Strange does give us is like, all right, so who's really the boss? Who are we really dealing with here? Because there's been like, now, how many projects have we had since Spider-Man Far From Home? Like, at least 6 or 7, right?
We had three movies last year, four movies last year, five shows.
And she's not.
Charlie already forgot about Eternals.
No, Eternals is not the one I forgot about. Yeah, I can promise you that. I forgot about What If, though. I will say that, even though we just talked about it 2 minutes ago.
It's so important now, though. It's very important. It's hilarious.
It's especially not. The excellent Doctor Strange episode.
There are zombies in Multiverse of Madness. I could not have guessed. But none of us could guess what the actual big bad of whatever's coming next is. There's no way. We could ask all four of us, like, right now. We all have a different answer. Because I'm sure if you went to Barhart, he'd be like, it's Kingpin. What are you talking about? Kofi's over here like me and thinks it's Kang. Like
I say Kang.
Freaking Zha Ling is still just assembling her army, just off in the cut.
That would be wild.
Yeah. Sharon's like sabotaging the government from inside of everything. It's just going to be a big battle. That is the thing.
Like, you know, you talk about that, and Brandon talks about Secret Wars. Like, I do think sometime in 2022, we need some kind of like pointed direct, like, at some time, you have to say something about where this is all going because it all seems so, like, there's connections, but it's just so all over the place. Whereas, you know, phase one, when you're building to, you know, the infinity of it all, everything had its own story, but it all kind of was working towards the Avengers and working towards this one thing and building towards Thanos and the Infinity Stones. And at some point, they have to, like, put this in a direction.
I'll say this. Phase one of the MCU did not give you that at all until the post-credit scene of the Avengers. You really had no kind of vision of the big picture. And typically, in the past, I would have agreed with you, Charlie. But then I watched The Mandalorian, and I watched those week-by-week episodes that were singular stories, single missions each week, slowly feeding the overarching story. And in season one, I said, man, I really wish this would kind of tell me where we're going, tell me what the point is. And then it didn't. Like, it just kind of got there with really entertaining episodes along the way. And it is my favorite. It is so good. Well, yeah.
And I guess what I'm saying is, phase one, you're, even if you didn't know Thanos, you were building towards the Avengers and you had the hints in each thing about the Avengers.
No.
I mean, you had hints in each thing. You had Samuel Jackson showing up. You had Coulson showing up.
I mean, you have that here too. You were building towards something.
You had also, it was grounded enough that you could separate these stories and they could be their own thing. And if nothing else happened from them, they could be their own thing. But now you're throwing a whole multiverse out of sync and then you're going to try to tell a grounded Ironheart story.
See,
like, you've got to find some way to make it all make sense and at least work towards something to make them cohesive.
See, the argument that I would make is that, like, the writing is on the wall. We are eventually getting to Secret Wars. I think, like, every piece of the puzzle that is being presented to us is going to somehow feed into Secret Wars, even if it is in, like, the smallest possible way. But at the same time, we are also getting, like, here is Kingpin and the kind of street-level big bad of all of these various shows. Here is all of the, like, government shady technology stuff with, like, Armor Wars and Ironheart and all of that. Here is, like, the cosmic stuff. Here is the supernatural stuff. Like, we are getting, it feels more reflective of the comics where you can have these kind of mini bosses and then you can have like the larger arc of Secret Wars. And I like that better. I like not having it be a thing where every single installment of the MCU has to feed into Secret Wars and has to be a piece of a puzzle. It can just thrive on its own and then funnel into the big thing once we get there.
Yeah, and I think both of you have good points here because I do want to see it all come together and all of it mean something, but I think along the way we are going to see threads that are unrelated to each other. Yeah. I think you're going to see Daredevil in New York with Kingpin and maybe Kate Bishop if she stays there and doesn't go live at her aunt's West Coast apartment or estate, and I think you'll have ground-level heroes, and then you'll have Sam Wilson who kind of can transcend because he's Captain America. He can help the ground-level heroes. He can also go up and be a big-time Avenger. You'll have, you know, your Black Panther and stories in Wakanda. And Doctor Strange, stories in the multiverse. Thor and the Guardian, stories in the cosmos. And I think there will be a lot of different kind of roads that a lot of times they will kind of lead to each other and go over each other and things like that. But I think along the way, you are going to have different paths. Aaron's been had thoughts on Aaron's face.
This is what I wanted. This is what I wanted. I wanted this to happen. And I was like, yes, we're doing it. We're just having it out right now. I think that a lot of my anxiety might be born out of like my ADHD or whatever. Like, I just want one thing to focus on. And I know that that's not something everybody has. But for me, I'm like, whoo, I don't understand. Like, it's hard for me to see how. Because you're right, Brent. I think that is what's going to happen, is that it's all parallel streams, and then they're going to hit each other for one project and then diverge again. And then at the big event, whatever freaking Avengers 5, whatever it is, if it's Secret Wars, if it's something else, it's all going to converge there and then immediately splinter off again until we get to the eventual Secret Wars where it's really going to hit the fan. And everybody from street level on up to cosmic is going to have their role to play in whatever is the big bad of it. I don't know if it's going to be Dr. Doom or if it's going to be Null or whatever. If it's evil time traveling Mark Ruffalo. Bam. There's so much black goop in the last 2 years. I stand by it. There is so much black goop in the MCU. There is so much.
I'd be so happy, but it is
freaking, there's just weird black goop running around. What the heck was that weird black goop that Jonathan Majors was using in Loki? Why are you using the same design language for these disparate things? We know from the Eternals that there was a world before the Celestials created this universe. Why? Why leave these breadcrumbs for me? This is what I'm talking about with my OCD. I'm like, that's not on accident. Me and Adam Barnhart have the freaking, like, you know, the crazy serial killer map in the other room where we're like,
we need to get that motherboard. We need to get, there is so much black goop in the MCU.
Oh my!
That and the Wheel of Evil.
Moment.
The Wheel of Evil. I'm about to build the Wheel of Evil before this year is over. We're going to go to Home Depot.
I love it.
The MCU is playing the Game of Thrones.
Also, we forgot to include it on the notes, but the Marvel Netflix shows leaving Netflix. I feel like we should touch on that because that is kind of crazy. Yeah.
Speaking of Adam.
Are they going to Disney Plus?
They haven't said yet. They've said that they'll let us know like soon, but
we're at the middle of the month, so the Disney Plus March list should be out like within the next few days. Mm-hmm. and that could, and but that, that's the same day as the Hulu list, so that could be an incredibly telling news drop when it arrives. We also know because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is leaving Netflix too. That seems like a prime Disney Plus thing. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents Disney of Plus S.H.I.E.L.D. makes all the sense.
Yeah,
but I
Daredevil, they have to tone it back.
And I don't see that happening. I hope that would genuinely would be shocked if they put those movies on Disney or those shows on Disney Plus anytime soon until there is like an adult section.
I will say though, my one thing that will be weird if they do end up on Hulu, like I've talked about this with my family, of like I don't envy the person who is going to have to figure out where to put in ad breaks in these shows that were originally designed to be streamed like in a single sitting. Because that's going to be really weird to see. Like, where do you fit in commercial break on this show? And so part of me wants them to be on Disney Plus so they can just run it uninterrupted. Because otherwise, with Hulu, it's going to be so many weird ads.
Car door slam commercial.
a Matt Damon crypto ad right before the big.
Yep.
The big king.
Just like fight. As a completionist, I want to see them all under the one Marvel tab.
Yep.
That's it. I don't ask for much. Sony, put Spider-Man in there. All right, we got to wrap it up for today because we have Ruben Fleischer, director of Uncharted and Venom. We have a spoiler-free Uncharted interview coming up next. No spoilers for Tom Holland's big video game film coming up. Aaron, any last words for today?
This was super fun. Marvel, just keep giving us trailers every week so we can geek out. Yeah, have Charlie go into jail four times episode.
Put some miles on that jail cell. Jenna.
Go read some comics. Go read some George Perez comics. I know it was announced right before we started recording that the Hero Initiative is reprinting JLA Avengers, which is one of the best comic runs ever. That is the pinnacle of a comic crossover. It is so good. So check that out. Go read some stuff from him because he is just incredible.
Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna keep it easy. And what they said, more trailers. Read all the comics.
Go.
I wish there's so much cool Doctor Strange to read that if you're a casual, there's so much I haven't read that the more I dive into Doctor Strange that it gets so much nuttier than you think. There's a whole arc where Loki becomes the Sorcerer Supreme, and that happened recently. They create hell in Las Vegas. Like there's really cool stuff in Doctor Strange, even the recent things that are really, really fun to read. So go give comics some money because without comics, none of this happens.
Absolutely.
So subscribe to a Substack, buy a comic, do something cool like that.
Go get some comics, listen to Comic Book Nation. Janelle's a huge Doctor Strange fan, and they do talk comics there quite often. How was Uncharted? I don't know if I want to put a number on it, but I do like it. I was quite surprised by Uncharted. I had a lot of fun watching it. Is it like an amazing movie? No, but it's kind of like Indiana Jones meets Pirates of the Caribbean in tone, and I really just had fun watching it. That said, not a huge Uncharted game, like whatever. I think they're probably great. I've never played through all of them, so I don't have that kind of preconceived version of what I want Nathan Drake to be. So I was able to just go in and enjoy it with the knowledge I have of those games, which is much more limited than people who have played through all four. So that said, I enjoyed Uncharted. Really grateful that Ruben Fleischer came on Phase Zero and had a really cool, honest conversation with us about making that movie, about looking back at Venom, about the plans he may or may not have had. I'm going to stop rambling. That's enough of a preview because it's coming up right now after this break. So see you next Wednesday. Enjoy this interview. Looking forward to hearing from all of you. If you have questions, hit us with your tweets directly. We don't really check the notifications on Phase Zero, but we appreciate when you like and retweet that stuff. We don't respond from that. We respond as ourselves. So tweet us or respond to Phase Zero. I don't know. Have a good week. Enjoy Ruben Fleischer.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life.
Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Welcome back to Phase Zero, everybody. Joining us right now, this is going to be a fun interview on the show. He's previously helmed a Marvel film in the form of Venom. That was the qualifier to get on Phase Zero, of course. Got to be part of the Marvel family. But also has headed up titles such as Gangster Squad, Zombieland, Zombieland Double Taps, a lot of movies that I've really enjoyed. And if you're anything like me or my age, you've probably spent a lot of time watching TV shows he's been involved with, like Robin Big, Rob Dyrdek's Fantasy Factory. Maybe you checked out his comic book TV series, Stumptown. But he's at the helm of the upcoming Uncharted movie. It's hitting theaters this weekend. I really, really enjoyed this movie a lot. He's joining us now on Phase Zero, Mr. Ruben Fleischer. Ruben, how you doing, man?
Awesome, Brandon. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, dude. Thank you for joining. I just want to tell you, I really enjoyed the film. And I'm going to be honest with you. When you go into a video game movie, it's easy to be a little nervous because video game movies sometimes come out okay. This one definitely raises the bar, and I want to thank you for that, because not only did you honor the game, you've got Tom Holland in it, you've got a great Naughty Dog story you're adapting, but you also put your own stamp on it, and it worked. So thank you for making a really good video game movie.
Well, thank you for telling me that. I it's always nerve-wracking when you take on something that's beloved by fans, and all you can do is hope they don't screw it up. So the fact that you appreciate it makes me really proud and happy.
Yeah, dude, you've earned it on this one. And you guys shot this. I want to start at the beginning, because you guys kind of shot this through the pandemic, right? You were the first production back to work back in 2020.
Yeah, it was a crazy experience. We shot the movie in Berlin, Germany, and we were prepping it all the way through the spring of 2020. And our first day of shooting was intended to be March 16th, 2020. And I think on the COVID timeline, Tom Hanks caught COVID on the 12th of March. And that was kind of, to me, the touchstone for when like the world kind of came to an end. And so we were in the midst of it out there in Germany. And at that time, it was way worse in Europe than it was in America. So all of our friends and family back home were like, you know, be careful. Like, you know, this shit's real. Like, be, you know, watch out. And crew members were starting to get a little nervous, and we just didn't know what was going to happen. And then, March 16th was our first day of shooting. We were lit. Our set was built. We'd rehearsed. The actors were there. Everything was ready to go. And the studio said, you know what, take that day. Don't shoot anything. But let's just see how this plays out. And then by that evening, they were like, okay, you guys got to get on a plane and come home. So I left Berlin. We locked the stages. I was like, you know, really sad because this was such a dream movie. And I had no confidence that we'd be returning. So it's to Sony's credit that by July, they felt like it was safe enough for us to return. You got to give Germany credit too, just because at that time they were so ahead of the curve in terms of like just reducing the spread. We unlocked the doors of the stages. Our sets were still there, maybe a little dusty, but in the world of Uncharted, that didn't hurt anything. And we got back to work, and we picked up where we left off and started shooting the film. We shot from July 2020 till the very end of October. And it was completely unprecedented. Without being too corny, it was an uncharted path, making a movie in a pandemic. And we all had to wear masks, obviously, and get tested every day. It really was challenging in terms of Berlin was really strict in terms of its restrictions as to like how many people can be in a room, things like that. For example, the auction scene, we were originally supposed to have twice as many extras, but we're unable to. That club scene where we had hundreds of kids jammed in a pretty much ventless basement was stressful. And then we went to Spain to shoot all the exteriors in that sequence where Nate and Chloe they meet in the fountains and the run on the rooftops. That day we tested 700 people between the cast, crew, and extras. It was a lot of people in a pandemic environment to have all together. Luckily it was outside, so we had a little bit more freedom, but it was a real challenge. And I got to give a lot of credit to the crew and the cast. We're just sticking with it. We didn't shut down a single day. I think we shot 77 days or something like that total in two different countries. And it was just an incredible experience, but not without challenges. That's for sure.
And you guys did a great job adapting, because when you watch the film, that doesn't come through that you guys had any like limitations or anything like that at all. Just, you guys made it all work really well. In the beginning of the film, you start with the cargo chase. And this has been one of the scenes that has been one of the most heavily marketed sequences you guys did too. And it's obviously very iconic from the Uncharted games. You open the film with it and you come back to it full circle. I want to hear about that. Like, how long was that shoot? Like, cause this probably had to be one of your biggest set pieces. And I imagine it took up a pretty good chunk of those 77 days, cause there's a lot of moving parts there, and homaging the game with that. It was so cool.
Yeah. I mean, that sequence was always one of my favorites from the video game franchise. And when I read the script and saw that it opened with that, I was just so stoked. The way that was shot was actually pretty cool. I'd never done anything quite like it, but there's these things called KUKA arms, which are robotic arms that you would see like on the floor of a car factory. And we were using them to suspend the boxes, and there was five of them, and they're all programmed by a computer so that they have like synchronized movement, and they were able to do like that fishtail thing, and we could stack them vertically. So they had a bit of a descent, which allowed gravity to help us out. And then our second unit director, Scott Rogers, who is also our stunt coordinator, just is like a master with rigging. And so putting the cast and the stunt guys on wires to traverse those boxes, it was shot in the parking lot outside of the stages in Babelsberg. And then we composited in the background. So it was really the robotic arms and boxes was provided by the special effects department, who also had giant fans blowing in Tom's face. The stunt team was responsible for conceiving of and shooting a bunch of that action. Scott, you know, Tom shot with Scott, and he'd shoot with me, and we kind of, you know, traded the set back and forth. The visual effects team, which was led by Chaz Jarrett, our visual effects supervisor, who's just beyond talented in terms of making it feel like he's really hanging out in the back of a plane.
Dude, I would love to, they need to release some behind the scenes stuff of that.
There's some pretty cool features that show kind of how it was made. And when I show it to friends who've seen the trailer, they can't believe, you know, it was just a couple dudes in a parking lot, bouncing around with boxes.
Unreal. Tom Cruise would have made you guys really fly a plane and drop it. I think you guys did.
We'll leave that to him, yeah, for sure.
You guys did it a pretty good way. In the games, obviously, Nathan, he's a cocky little fella, and Tom does a really good job bringing that to life. And he also kind of puts like the Tom stamp of his own little personality traits to it that he likes to bring to characters. I want to hear from you, like, you know, you guys struck a nice balance of honoring it, but also, you know, making this a character that works in a film. What were kind of the core components of Nathan that came from the game that you wanted to make sure came through before adding your own stamps to it?
Well, Nathan Drake in the game is somebody who's been at this treasure hunting thing for a long time. Whereas our character, you know, he's an unassuming bartender who has a love for history, but other than that, really no experience out there in the world, fighting, shooting, jumping off of planes, all the things that he learns how to do. So I think that the naivete that Tom brings to the character is warranted, because he's not this veteran guy. He's a guy who just yesterday was, you know, tending bar, and then just kind of got thrust into these extreme circumstances. So what I love is that for fans of the game, they get to see a different chapter in Nate's life and kind of see how he would go through these experiences, which would lead him to become the Nathan Drake that they know and love.
And this does kind of, it is like very much a Nathan Drake origin story in this world. And it also pulls in the storyline of the brother, which is a much later story from the games. And I love that you're setting this up already. Are you guys already laying out, like, do you have ideas? Are you like, well, listen, but we brought this in now so we can maybe explore it later. I'm not going to spoil anything, but there are certainly teases.
I would say that it all depends on, you know, the audience. If they like this movie enough to want to see another one, hopefully we'll get to be lucky enough to make a sequel. But yeah, you can't help but, you know, just through the process of making this and adding the movie, you know, my mind wanders and I start to imagine different adventures that Nate and Sully could go on. And as a fan of the games, you know, there's characters I'd certainly love to meet that we have yet to. And other, you know, cool action set pieces that we can kind of borrow from as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, these games are full of those. And I spoke to Tati, who was brilliant as a kind of a gray area, mostly villain character in this one. And she was an absolute blast to talk to. She's so nice in person. She's so intense in the film. I want to hear about bringing that out of her because you created a new character, a fresh character for the film with her, and she just knocks it out of the park.
Yeah, she's such a cool actress. I will be honest, I wasn't familiar with her prior to, starting to look for someone who could play that role. And she auditioned, and I was completely blown away by her screen presence. She's surprisingly young, but she has a maturity that I think is just really impressive. She also, you know, having spoken to her, you can attest that, you know, she's like this giggly, high-pitched voice, like girly girl, which is anything but the character that she plays in this movie. So it's a testament to her talent and the character that she created that, you know, she was able to transform herself to become Braddock.
I was also reading in the notes that Antonio Banderas and Tom Holland originally didn't have a scene together, and they end up getting one early on that kind of really, I guess, puts things in perspective for Nathan. Tom wanted that scene is what it said in the notes for the film. Like, did Tom come to you and say, listen, I got Antonio, like Puss in Boots is in the movie. I gotta work with this guy. Like, what?
It was actually my, I don't want to take credit for it, but I will. It was my instinct that the hero and the villain should face off in a quote game recognized game moment. And it was odd to me that they never had that opportunity. They only saw each other from afar. And while it's not like the longest scene, at least it gives us the opportunity for Tom to look him, you know, dead in the eyes and know like who he's up against and the challenge he faces.
I also love how that's kind of like two generations of actors that are face to face for a second too. Cause Tom is like the new generation, right? And Antonio has been doing this for a minute and he's such a legend. I love how you put them together.
I think that's true of Wahlberg as well. I mean, it was really cool to have, this mixture of personalities. I mean, Sophia and Tati are both, you know, I don't think either have ever been in a studio movie before. So we had the whole spectrum.
Sophia was great as Chloe too. And you even threw her into the classic costume. She's the only character from the games who got her own, like was the protagonist in a game. Can you talk about kind of making sure she dressed and brought out? Cause that, in the game, she's very much that has that same independent spirit, has that same kind of like drive, not overzealous, not overly cautious. Like, I love to hear how you guys worked with Sophia on nailing Chloe Frazier. Like that.
Yeah, character. I think a lot of credit is due to the writers who, you know, created her character on the page. And then it was left to Sophia and myself to interpret it. But I think so much of it was on the page, just in terms of her backstabbing and double crossing. Trust is a huge theme in the movie. And she definitely represents kind of for Nate, somebody who isn't able to ever really invest in other people, almost as a cautionary tale, I think. Chloe's just a terrific character from the games that we were really happy to feature in the film. And Sophia did an amazing job bringing her to life.
Sophia was telling me that sequence with her and Tom underwater, she was just really underwater for a while. By the time she came up, her eyes were just red. I are those days more fun on set when people are kind of in these unusual circumstances on set, or is it like reblocking that shot? Does that just become a nightmare where you have to like empty a tank and fill it back up?
There's a couple noteworthy things about that. I'd never done something quite like that. Maybe I had limited water work and things past, but never like a situation where a whole set gets filled with water. The interesting thing that I never would have guessed is the way that you actually accomplish that from a safety perspective, as much as a practical perspective, is that instead of having a set that the water goes into, what we did was we built a set that they would lower into the water. So there was a giant tank and the cameras are fixed to the set. And so we all would descend together. And so it appears as if the room's filling with water, but in fact, what's happening, because it's coming up from below, is that the set is actually being lowered into the water. And then when the take's done, then we go back up and it, you know, the, all the water drains out and we do it again, which was super creative, but certainly time consuming. And then it's fun doing sequences like that, but at the same time, it's always a little nerve wracking when you have actors in real jeopardy. I mean, they literally were underwater and holding their breath for extended time. So there's safety divers surrounding them with extra tanks. Luckily, both Tom and Sophia are really physically capable. And Sophia actually, her lung capacity is insane. Like, I think she could actually stay underwater longer than Tom. And so that made it easier. She, I don't know if she has a swimming background or what, but she was really capable underwater. But yeah, it's always a little nerve-wracking when you're putting actors and not stunt people in extreme circumstances.
And now I need to hear how you did the flying pirate ships.
You'll be sad to learn that those were not actually flying pirate ships, but they were in fact sets that were on the ground in a parking lot.
Again, wow, that's cool. That's
parking lots were a big part of the making of this movie.
That's funny. I know that the PG-13R conversation was a conversation you had a lot during Venom. And I don't think Uncharted was ever a movie people were like, this needs to be rated R. But there is like a one specific moment of, I wouldn't say it's like explicit violence. It's more of like intimate violence. There is, and I'm not going to spoil it here, but like I think you'll know what I'm talking about, where it doesn't get too bloody, but it is very clear what happens. When you have to walk the line, this is a game that's rated T for teen. It's not M for mature. It's a movie that's always going to be PG-13 at most. How do you guys figure out, like, how much can we show? How far can we take this? How many cooks are in that kitchen to make sure that no lines are crossed? And it also conveys, like, the intensity and realism of the scene.
So there's a lot of variables that factor into that equation. One, needless to say, is the MPAA ratings board. Who has strong opinions about how much, you know, how graphic the nature of the violence can be, how much blood, how much whatever else. And they literally watch it and give you feedback. And sometimes it's, you know, too much. And then you make adjustments and resubmit it in order to make sure that you don't cross past that PG-13 rating. But in our case, I actually feel like we kind of monitored ourselves, because we always intended this film to be more of a fun for all ages type of movie, like in the spirit of Pirates or something like that, that didn't rely on excessive violence or gratuitous, you know, just bloodshed. We always wanted to be something that, you know, a family could watch together. So, even in the case of what happens, we intentionally cut away from it in the midst of it, so that it didn't ever get too scary for a kid that might be watching the movie with his parents.
Yeah, and I can also appreciate that. You just don't, some movies that works, some movies you don't need that. I would say it's one of those, which is this, like Indiana Jones is meets Pirates in a lot of ways. I like that you referenced Pirates there, because I caught a vibe there as well. But by the end of the film, Sully has the iconic mustache. Did you have to convince Wahlberg to put it on?
No, not at all. He grew that thing himself. I can't take any credit for it. That was all Mark. And I think he was excited to kind of have the character come full circle. And, his wardrobe is also directly taken from the game. So I think he was stoked to, have Victor Sullivan kind of resemble the one that fans know and love from the games.
So if Sony were to say, all right, we want Uncharted 2 right now, and if you were on board, if you were interested in doing it, how long do you think it would take, if it was start tomorrow, to get another movie done? If the writers put the pen down to shooting to editing, how long does that usually take on a movie like this?
Well, that's a really good question. In the case of this one, I think it was over 12 years of development prior to shooting. So it can take a really long time. But yeah, it really is coming up with that story that's worth, you know, telling, which is the hardest part. Once the script exists, you know, between prep, shooting and post, that's all pretty conventional. But the hardest thing is just coming up with a really fresh story that, you know, audiences will want to go watch.
Yeah. And before I let you go, I'm going to have to talk a little bit of Marvel and your other projects with you. I want to start transition that by asking, in adapting a video game versus adapting a character like Venom, who has so many different comic stories, like, how does the prep differ? Is there, like, because obviously there's things you want to probably say, like, this is, you know, something fans love, but also we got to do this our way. What is the difference in getting ready for
this? I don't think it's so different based on the source material. I think you want to create something that's unique and original for the big screen, and at the center of it, it has to be a character or characters and a story worth telling. That's the most essential thing, because it doesn't matter how great the IP is. If the story is, you know, not worth watching, then you're not going to do very well. But at the same time, you have to really respect the audience that loves that thing of origin, whether it's a video game or a comic book or anything else. There's a reason fans are so protective of these things they love. They don't want to see it kind of misinterpreted or bastardized or anything else. And so I feel that pressure of wanting to deliver for the fans something that they feel like is complements the thing they love, or hopefully even enhances the things that they love. And I thought Tom Hardy's performance in Venom was a really cool version of that character. And I think Mark and Tom nailed it with their versions of Nate and Sully as well.
Yeah. I remember when Venom released, like, critics were tough on it, but fans loved it. It was hugely successful at the box office. Like, when you get, like, kind of conflicting feedback from those two very different, clearly apparently different audiences, like, how much time do you spend thinking about that? And does it influence your choice about going on for Venom 2 at all?
The critical reaction, I'm not going to lie, is a bummer. Just because you work so hard on something, and I know, having watched it with audiences, how much they enjoyed it. So it was a little surprising to me how negative they were. And I do think it's unwarranted, because, you know, the audiences, as you said, really love the film. Otherwise, I don't think it would have been quite the success it was. So it was disheartening for sure that it has this kind of association. But hopefully over time, people will, you know, there's plenty of movies that are beloved that when they came out were panned by critics. It's just unfortunate that Rotten Tomatoes exists as this aggregate that then forever will have a assigned rating to a thing. That being said, you know, it is what it is. And if people like the movie, that's all I care about. And, you know, hopefully the same will be true of Uncharted, that, you know, I made it for the audience. I made it to be a really fun escapist, you know, just action-packed adventure. And I, you know, at the end of the day, that's who I made the movie for. And I'll be proud and excited if fans and audiences love the film.
I personally think you just really wanted to work with Tom Holland at some point, because I think, no, I'm just messing with you. But I remember before Venom came out, like at Comic-Con, everybody was asking, you know, is Spider-Man here? Is Tom Holland here? Like, I remember Jessica Chobot hosting that panel and asking twice, and we were all like, wait a second, are they about to announce this? Like, and I know you're a fan of these characters. Like, I know you really have a connection to them. So I can only imagine that you kind of pushed at least a little behind the scenes to maybe say, hey, we could maybe do this. Like, did you, like, how was that ever a conversation? Because there were rumors like Tom makes a cameo, and then it ended up happening in Venom 2. Like, did you, like, was that ever a conversation that was like an actual possibility with yours?
No, honestly, and I'm going to just be straight up because I don't know exactly what I'm allowed to say, but so much time has passed. But I feel like in the creation of Venom for feature films, you know, we had to come up with a whole different origin story from the comics. And that was really scary because Venom in the comics is born from Spider-Man. And in our movie, he wasn't. And I was always really, really nervous that, you know, that would just be a bridge too far for fans of the source material. Thankfully, people were willing to accept. And I don't know if it's in part because they acknowledge that Marvel and Sony are distinct from one another and that at that point they weren't working as much in conjunction. So much so that we couldn't even have Spider-Man, like we couldn't give him his real birth, so to speak.
Or like the spider logo and stuff, like that was off the table.
Well, I mean, the way I argued was like, why would he have a spider on his chest if he wasn't born from Spider-Man? And so that's why I came up with that veiny thing where it was just kind of a cool white design. You know, my dream would be if ever he were to meet Spider-Man and they were to cross paths, that upon that meeting, the spider would be on his chest at that point. Yeah. But you know, I'm not in a position to do that. So, sure. But yeah, I think we had to create our own story for Eddie and Venom. And I'm just glad that audiences went along with it and they seem to like the second one and hopefully there'll be more.
Hey, maybe you get another crack at it and it'd be a lot of fun to see you get, I know that crossover is something you want to do. And speaking of other films you've done and sequels and stuff, I just want to say one sequel I'm so glad you came back and did was the Zombieland sequel. I think from watching your interviews and the cast talk about those, I feel like those are some of the most fun movies you guys have ever made. Like Double Tap was great. First one was fantastic. I still remember spontaneous. I worked at Starbucks. I got off work. Some girl from my high school I was in high school with, we both got off work at the same time. We were like, I want to go see that Zombieland movie. And like, I can't say, I saw it the Freehold Lowe's Metroplex. And I can't remember how and when and why I saw every movie. Zombieland is one I still remember. Like, I liked it so much that I loved it. I'd love to hear, like, is that truly one of the best filmmaking experiences you've ever had? And of course, that has to be followed with like, is there going to be, are you still talking with everybody? Can there be a third?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad it comes across because making the first movie was a dream come true. It was my first ever film. Emma and Jesse were relative unknowns at that time. And yeah, it was a dream experience. And because it was such like a kind of random off the radar movie, I think people were really surprised by how charming it was. And we wanted to make a sequel, you know, as soon as the first one came out, but we just didn't have a story worth telling. And it just took time to kind of let it marinate and let the characters evolve. And I'm so pleased and proud that the cast was able to come back so that we can make the second one. And Emma joked while we were making the film, like, yeah, we should do one of these every 10 years. So hopefully by 2029, there'll be another Zombieland. But I don't know. I mean, I also kind of feel like the Double Tap, I don't know. I wonder how many times you can return to the well. So we'll see.
That's fair. Well, for now, man, I'm really thrilled for everybody to go see Uncharted this weekend. If you ever need a zombie, an alien, a pirate, sign me up. I'm kill me off in the next one. Awesome. But Uncharted, you guys knocked it out of the park. It's an absolute blast. And I'm really happy for you guys. Everybody got through the production safely. We're able to celebrate this movie now and hope everybody goes and supports it so we get Uncharted 2 ASAP. absolute pleasure to talk with you, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon. I really appreciate it. This was so fun.